Welcome to Shattering Myths. This program is devoted to the most important and to the fastest growing segment of our society. To those who know that the world's political, religious, media, military, and economic institutions are corrupt, that they are counterproductive, and that they cannot be fixed. Our mission, therefore, is to look behind the headlines, to know who is working against our interests, to understand why they're doing so. Because exposing and condemning errant and treacherous schemes isn't hateful. It's caring. In fact, it is far wiser for us to share what we know is wrong with these institutions, to get people to the point that they're willing to question their faith, their patriotism, their economy. And then once they're in a position where they're open to questioning these things, for the first time in their lives, they'll be receptive to the truth. And that's vastly better than trying to repopulate these institutions, you know, as so many people do, wanting you to vote for their candidate or their party, thinking that if they only get enough of their party elected, that that will make a difference, but it never does. It's about confronting the truth that matters today. In our concluding hour, we're going to return to evidence and reason. We're going to explore the Torah. It means teaching. It's God's guidance to us. It does not mean law. It's liberating. It's not enslaving. There is only one and only one covenant, and that covenant is presented in one place in the Torah. And it is the only opportunity for you to get to know God, to engage in a relationship with Him, and to have Him save you. If you are not a participant in the covenant, there is no opportunity whatsoever for salvation. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion anytime over the next 3 hours, encourage your calls. 877-300-7645. Speaking of encouraging calls, we got an extraordinarily encouraging call yesterday from Nick. And I want to speak just a little bit about the call from Nick before we go on to today's news. Nick was the first person to call into this program. Began doing this program, Shattering Myths, on the Genesis Communication Network about two years ago. He was the first to call in. I was talking about Muhammad's being a repulsive individual and that it doesn't make a lot of sense to trust your soul to a man who was, among other things, a pedophile. And Nick has a relative, maybe his sister, who married a Muslim man. And he called in defending Muhammad, saying, yeah, maybe your interpretation here isn't right, maybe it's a different time, and maybe there's some reasons, and that, you know, Muslims will say that he married her to keep her pure, to so that he could raise her the right way. You're talking about a 53-year-old man with a 6-year-old girl, and the first experience they have together is her being thrown into his bed. And we talked about it for a while. You could tell that he was genuinely interested in knowing what really happened and whether it was wrong or right. We had lots more conversations with Nick over time. And then something happened. Somewhere along the way, Nick, who presented himself originally as a person who was just kind of searching for answers, came to the point where his search ultimately led him to the Torah, to the God of the Torah, to the covenant. And yesterday's call, when you consider how far Nick has come, so that he's drilling in to the one requirement of the covenant that is exceptionally difficult for him, trying to find, is there some wiggle room here? You can tell he wants to be part of the covenant. He's come to know the God of the covenant, and he's looking for some wiggle room on circumcision. That's a long way to come in a short period of time. The thing also about Nick, and the reason I think that he has come so far, is because of his intelligence His tactic yesterday was absolutely brilliant. He began by saying, you know, what's the deal with the food laws? And, you know, which says, don't eat pork. And you know, I understand. At one time it was dangerous. It's, you know, in the last 50 years we've resolved some of those issues. You know, how do you handle that? And the idea was, as I shared yesterday, God asks us to observe his Torah. There are no laws. God does not say that if you eat pork, your relationship with him is somehow strained. He just says, eating pork is not good for you. He was right. And so then it becomes whether or not the other instructions, particularly regarding the covenant, are given in the same way. That it's guidance, good advice, fatherly advice, but without a consequence. You know, it's you're better off being circumcised. You're better off walking away from religion, but it's really not a requirement. It's brilliant. Tactic on his part, and I'm using that in the best possible light. And of course, we discussed that, you know, circumcision does not allow for a spiritual interpretation alone. You know, God says unless you are circumcised of the flesh and of the spirit, you're not going to enter the kingdom of heaven. You can't participate in Passover. In fact, that's the last thing you should want to do. If you're not circumcised, you don't want to celebrate Passover as a male. Because the sign of the covenant and participating in the covenant is circumcision. If you're not circumcised, then God's saying, by all means, don't participate in Passover. Because if you do, you become immortal. And you'll be immortal, estranged from my family. And that's not a good thing for you. But I just want to share that. This realization that there are lots of people out there like Nick. And in fact, I received a letter from one gentleman this morning. I hope he calls in on a future day, or maybe just share his emails on a future day, that have come to recognize the truth, have come to distance themselves from patriotism and politics and religion, because this program has prompted them to think. And then once they begin to question those things, they have come to embrace the truth. I was listening in the background this morning before the show began to the NFL's presentation of Media Day for the Super Bowl. I've got to tell you, I'm a sports fan. You know, I enjoy sports. It's my escape. You know, we all need things that are just an escape for us. Sports is my escape. You know, I don't do video games. I don't drink to excess. I don't do drugs. You know, I really don't have other escapes. That's my escape. And I really like the NFL football team. My favorite two teams are playing in the Super Bowl. So I'm pretty happy about that. But I was really distraught this morning. A fellow that, I mean, I don't know him personally, but I do, like most Americans, have an affinity for him because of his personality. Peyton Manning, quarterback of the Denver Broncos, began by saying, first and foremost, I want to thank all of our troops in Afghanistan who are fighting for our freedom. And he went on and on and on. It's a horrible myth. There is not a single American who fought in Afghanistan who fought for American freedom. They didn't even fight for the freedoms of the Afghanis. It was a colossal mistake. We ought not have gone. We made a bad situation worse, just as we did in Iraq. And to twist the truth, because by coming across patriotic, one's brand is enhanced, and Peyton Manning makes a fortune with his brand by endorsing the products. That's especially troublesome. And it's even more troublesome when somebody who is as well-regarded personally as Peyton Manning spreads this kind of lie that our military fighting in Afghanistan, fighting in Iraq, somehow protected American freedoms. It is not true. And if we can't absolve ourselves of patriotic lies and deal with the truth, then there really is no hope for us. Not individually, not as a society. Now, I know that's not popular. I know there's a lot of people that can hear this and would come to despise me and want to kill the messenger. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to share the message of one Thomas Jefferson, probably the smartest of all Americans, certainly the most thoughtful of all Americans. I want to share what he had to say about having an established military. Because while I understand that it's easy to attack and criticize my position on it, it's going to be a little harder for you patriots to criticize his. He wrote this to David Humphreys in 1789. There are instruments so dangerous to the rights of a nation and which place them so totally at the mercy of their government and its governors, whether legislative or executive, they should be restrained from keeping such instruments on foot. Such an instrument is a standard army, an established military. Jefferson, in this letter, called an established military, which is not only what we have in America. Our military is as large as the rest of the world's combined. We have the largest established military in the world by a huge magnitude. He says, they are in fact dangerous to the rights of the nation. They place the people at the mercy of their government. In his letter to James Madison lived just down the road. I lived for a significant portion of my life in Charlottesville, Virginia, which is where Thomas Jefferson not only built the University of Virginia, but also built his home, Monticello. Been to both many, many times. Madison's home, Mount Pelier, is just down the road. It's in Orange County, just a matter of a 30-minute drive now from Jefferson's. They were close friends. Jefferson wrote to Madison in 1787, I do not like in the new federal constitution the omission of a Bill of Rights providing clearly and without aid of sophisms for protection against an established military. Jefferson did not sign, did not approve the U.S. Constitution because it did not prohibit an established military. Jefferson, in his first annual message as President of the United States, said bluntly, it is not needful, nor is it safe, that a standing army, an established military, should be kept in times of peace. Now, he would go on to clarify that and said, listen, you ought not have a Department of Defense. There should be no reason to have an established military to defend against invasion. Now, Americans, they just can't fathom that because they've been lied to so much, propagandist platitudes about how the military has provided our freedom. And it's an outright lie, and Jefferson recognized it as such. Jefferson recognized that should the United States honor the provisions in the Second Amendment, it would be impossible for anyone to invade this country. He said, you know, it's incumbent, it's absolutely necessary as a underpinning of a free society that there be militias. Therefore, there shall be no law that infringes upon the citizen's right to keep and to bear arms. Now, of course, our liberal judges have destroyed the Second Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. The way it is written, the way our country was founded on that Constitution, every citizen should be able to have and to have with them, own and to have with them, every form of weaponry that would be used by a military. Now, if all Americans were armed, or those Americans who wished to be armed were armed, and there weren't restrictions on their arms, it would be impossible for any country at any time to invade and occupy the United States. Our freedom would never be at risk. Jefferson knew that. But you could put our freedom at risk if you infringed upon the Second Amendment and you established a standing military where the government could impose draconian measures of control over its citizens, where it becomes impossible to rebel against them. Now, Jefferson wasn't trying to suggest that we need to have militias that go attack the government. That wasn't the purpose at all. The purpose is, you want a society to remain free, have the citizens be armed, but not the government. That was the answer. It's something that we have lost sight of as a nation. In his reply to Lord North's proposition in 1775, Jefferson wrote, "Standing armies, which is today we would call that an established military, are inconsistent with a people's freedom, and they are subversive of their quiet," which means of their privacy. You know, the NSA is run by active members of the armed forces. It's a general that heads them. Jefferson recognized that having an established military not only constrains a person's freedom, it's not only inconsistent with freedom, they're subversive of our privacy. Now, he wrote this. He recognized this over 200 years before it would manifest itself in our world today with the NSA's violation of the U.S. Constitution, an invasion into our privacy. As I say, he was the most brilliant American to ever live. Jefferson wrote, "A distinction between the civil and military is one which it would be for the good of the whole to obliterate as soon as possible." You know, I own an airplane. I fly it across the country. There's huge swaths of them. I mean, gargantuan swaths of America I can't fly over. I have to fly around because they are separate to the military. There is a distinction in America and an entirely different set of rules that govern the military versus civilians. It's why rape is so prevalent in the military and why it isn't punished. It's why there is no freedom in the military. You are governed by an entirely different set of laws. It's not the U.S. Constitution. It's a military code of conduct. And Jefferson said, so long as that kind of differential, that distinction is made, we're done. His most eloquent reply was to a Frenchman, Jean-Baptiste Meissonier. He responded to his questions in 1786. Madison also noted that at this time that never-ending wars tend to destroy both liberty and prosperity. And keep in mind that America, in the 400 years since the colonists first invaded North America, have engaged in 101 wars, one war every 4 years. So as not to truncate this, when Shattering Myths continues, the bottom of the hour, I'm going to share Jefferson's most brilliant treatise on why we ought not have an established military. We'll be back in a moment. As I share this Jefferson quote with you, it's important you recognize that America likes to present itself as the most peaceful of nations, that we don't start wars, we strive to end them. It's, of course, a myth. America has been engaged in 101 wars in its 400-year existence since the first colonists came and began to terrorize the native Indian populations. 101 wars. That's one war every 4 years. So now that we recognize that, let's share this quote. "Of all of the enemies to public liberty, war is perhaps the most to be dreaded, because it comprises and develops the germ of every other." Now, before I read more, think of that. The mentality is that the quote that I cited from Peyton Manning this morning is that our military, and it's willing to engage in war, has made us free. And Jefferson's saying, no, the opposite is true. That a military engaging in war is the most dreaded of all public enemies, the enemies to liberty. Jefferson's view is the antithesis of the view of the vast preponderance of Americans. Now, was he right? Or are the majority of Americans right? Here's what he wrote again. Of all the enemies to public liberty, war is perhaps the most to be dreaded because it comprises and develops the germ of every other. War is the parent of armies, of established militaries, and from these proceed debts and taxes. And armies and debts and taxes are the known instruments for bringing the many under the domination of the few. In war, too, the discretionary power of the executive is extended. His influence in dealing out offices, dealing out honors, dealing out money is multiplied. And all of the means of seducing minds, he's speaking of propaganda, he's speaking of patriotism, are added to those of subduing the force of the people. The same malignant aspect in republicanism can be traced to the inequality of fortunes and to the opportunities of fraud growing out of a state of war, and in the degeneracy of manners and of morals engendered by both. No nation could preserve its freedom in the midst of continual warfare. And we haven't. Rather than war and armies fighting in war, troops engaged in their military duty, keeping us free, they have done just the opposite. The military is counterproductive to your freedom. It's the source of debts and taxes. It is the instrument which brings the many under the domination of the few. The discretionary power that grows out of the presidency, the executive branch, during times of war, is used to deal out offices where they should not be, to provide honors and money, and to seduce minds, ultimately subduing the people. He calls an established military malignant, that it produces an inequality of fortunes. That's what our friend Larry, that calls the program quite often, speaks of when he speaks of this integration between the merchants and the military. The same malignant aspect dealing to inequality of fortunes and opportunities for fraud. You know that the U.S. military has never been audited. It's required by the Constitution, required by law. They've never been audited. They've spent billions on accounting systems they don't run. There are trillions of dollars unaccounted for. Why? Fraud. Purposeful. Deception. Growing out of a state of war, and America's 101 wars, creates a degeneracy of matters, of manners and morals. We lose our ability to be moral when we have an established military and fight so many wars. We make irrational and immoral decisions. No nation, he said, could survive. Powerful. Brilliant. Accurate. And yet, devastatingly unpopular today. Now, if you're one of the many who chafe at that position, think about who you are denying. Try to argue against his logic. You can't. Not rationally. Not wielding evidence. Speaking of the consequence of war and of delusions of all kind on both sides, this story came out this morning. Afghan President Hamid Karzai reportedly believes that the U.S. government and military, the U.S. government and the U.S. military, they're one and the same, by the way, have a hidden agenda and are a hidden force behind recent terrorist attacks in Afghanistan. And as an attack earlier this month that killed 22 people is an example of this. The Washington Post, citing an Afghan official, who said it was sympathetic to Karzai's view. In other words, the Afghan officials say, yeah, I agree with Karzai. The U.S. is aiding and abetting the Taliban in Afghanistan, is on the side of Islamic terrorism as opposed to fighting Islamic terrorism. Reported that the Afghan leader believes that dozens of attacks blamed on the Taliban were orchestrated by the U.S. to weaken his government and foment instability in the country. It's true that the U.S. government despises Hamid Karzai. Don't trust him as far as they could throw him because he's a con man. He's a fraud. He's probably the most corrupt leader of any nation in the world. And that's saying a lot when you've got guys like Bashar al-Assad out there of Syria, like Sisi of the general who upended the democratically elected government of Egypt out there, like the royal families and who have their private fiefdoms in Saudi Arabia, the Saud family. It's saying a lot, but he's way up there on the corrupt list. Wouldn't trust him as far as he could throw him. In fact, you know you can't trust him. But he knows that the American government can't be trusted. And you might say, oh, that's preposterous that the United States would orchestrate terrorist attacks in conjunction with the Taliban. Absolutely preposterous. And I'm going to read some quotes from Americans and say, yeah, that's preposterous, but it isn't. America's first engagement with the Taliban was during the late 1970s. Zbigniew Brzezinski wrote a letter to then-President Carter, Jimmy Carter, and proposed a plan whereby America could rent the Taliban from Pakistan and deploy the Taliban with U.S. weapons against the Soviet-backed government in Afghanistan and give the Soviets a taste of what they gave us in Vietnam. That was his plan. And so Brzezinski convinced Carter that it was a swell idea to start a war in Afghanistan and to use the Taliban and to go through the Pakistani government to rent them, to supply them with their military weapons so that the plan would have our former Secretary of Defense, Gates, who's just written a scathing book, be the point man. And there's video of both Gates and of Zbigniew Brzezinski giving the speech to the Taliban of how their God will prevail, that their God is with them, and that their God will help them bring down the government of Afghanistan. But that was made possible because the United States went to Pakistan and negotiated with Pakistan through military hardware bribes the deployment of the Taliban, just as someone might come to the United States and say, you know, I want to use the U.S. Marines. And if that country says, you know, we make a lot of really fancy military hardware that you guys can use, I'll give not only your Marines some advanced hardware to deploy, but I'll also give your government some advanced hardware because we're paying you to rent them. And we did. We used them, we directed them, we equipped them, we paid them. So this notion that America went into Afghanistan to fight the Taliban is pure rubbish. Taliban was our ally. We used them to start the previous war in Afghanistan. The report, returning to this article, is another sign of the deepening rift between the United States and Karzai, who has continued refuse to sign a tentative security agreement allowing for American troops to remain in Afghanistan through 2014. And I want to bring up the reason that Karzai doesn't want to sign it. He brought together the tribal leaders, the warlords of Afghanistan, who are all beholden to the Taliban, because if they weren't beholden to the Taliban, they'd be dead. And they want Afghanistan to be managed under Islamic law, under Sharia. And so if the United States wants to continue to play, the United States will be held to the standard of Sharia law, which means if an American kills a Muslim, the American is going to be tried in a Sharia court. If a Muslim kills an American, that Muslim will be heralded as a hero because of Sharia law. The U.S. ambassador to Afghanistan's James Cunningham told the Post that Karzai's suspicions represented, quote, a deeply conspiratorial view that is divorced from reality. You know, those in power don't like when people connect the dots. They don't like it when people come to recognize that there is a conspiracy. Now, I am not a conspiratorial host. I understand the impetus for the conspiracy that is so destructive in our world. But I don't speak about them. And I don't speak about them primarily because of this kind of reply. Karzai is now being called a conspiracy theorist. And his views are being said to be divorced from reality, when in fact, they are based in reality. But it's so easy for the establishment to distance itself from statements like this by simply saying, it's a conspiracy, it's delusional. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. You can participate in this program. You can even challenge the positions that are being presented by its host by calling toll-free 877-300-7645. I'm going to read such a challenge to the views of the host. U.S. Ambassador to Afghanistan, James Cunningham, told the Post, this would be the Washington Post, that Karzai's suspicions represented, and I quote, a deeply conspiratorial view that is divorced from reality. It flies in the face of logic and morality to think that we would aid the enemy that we are trying to defeat, end quote. So, when the United States paid billions of dollars to rent the Taliban, when the United States paid the Taliban billions of dollars, providing weapons to the Taliban, and now they're supposedly at war against the Taliban, wouldn't that fly in the face of logic? Wouldn't that fly in the face of morality? You know, in every war, America has aided the enemy that it said it was trying to defeat. It's Americans that built up Germany's military might. It was Americans that provided the military might and the chemical and biological weapons of Saddam Hussein. It was America that equipped Al-Qaeda. It was America that aided and abetted Mao Zedong and then fought his troops in Korea. It was America that built the factories and aided the Soviet Union and then fought against their weapons in Vietnam. It is what America does. Yes, it is immoral. Yes, it flies in the face of logic, but yet it is what we did. It's the ambassador's answer symbolizes, it literally embodies the reason that Jefferson detested what the man represents, which is an established military order. Speaking of the military order, General Joseph Dunford Jr., the top U.S. commander in Afghanistan, added, "We have spent 12 years trying to bring peace and stability to Afghanistan in the face of threats from terrorists and insurgent networks. To suggest otherwise does a grave disservice to those who have sacrificed for the people of Afghanistan." There's only one part of that that's true. It's the part of it that most Americans don't get. We didn't invade Afghanistan for the benefit of the American people. There was no benefit or service provided to the American people at all for the American invasion of Afghanistan. He at least admitted that it was a service for the Afghanis. Now, how do you bring peace and stability with the weapons of war? They had a stable government. Was run by the Taliban. We empowered the Taliban. We enabled the Taliban to defeat the secular Russian-backed government of Afghanistan. We put the Taliban in power. And you're saying that now that you're bringing peace and stability to Afghanistan by taking the country away from the religious institution that you gave it to, and that by bombing the country and by invading the country with the world's largest military, that you brought peace? the terrorist activity that you say that you were there to fight was essentially non-existent in Afghanistan prior to the American invasion, and now it's ruthless and deadly. What part of reality do our generals not understand? What part of the realization that those who sacrificed their lives in Afghanistan did so making a bad situation worse? To tell the truth does not do a disservice to them. It does a service to them. It might be painful for the families to hear. But if we don't confront the truth, if we don't embrace the truth, if we don't distance ourselves from the lies, from propaganda and patriotism, we'll continue to squander lives making bad situations worse. This is serious stuff, folks. We're on the wrong side. According to the Afghan official quoted by the Post, Karzai's theory is based upon suspicions that the attacks are intended to draw attention away from civilian casualties caused by U.S. airstrikes. He also said that the Taliban's attacks have been too sophisticated to be the work of the Taliban itself. He's saying, suggesting that Islam is way too dumb to have a coordinated attack. It's a hell of a statement. But it also brings to light that you cannot endear yourself to a people by killing their civilians, which is what we have done in Afghanistan. You can't win a war that way. We tried that in Vietnam. It does not work.